You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle with Matty Owens Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. Make sure to check out our YouTube channel and hit that subscribe button while you're there. And of course, you can find us on all the major podcast platforms as well. The madness is almost upon us, Common Fans. And what goes better with basketball all day than certified Piedmontese beef? Whether it's steaks, burgers, ribs, whatever you're grilling, you can find it at your local Mercado Butcher Shop at 30th and Yankee Hill or 84th and Havelock in Lincoln, and also at 162nd and Maple in Omaha. You can also go to cpbeef.com to get certified Piedmontese products shipped right to your front door anywhere in the United States. Make it happen, Common Fans. Certified Piedmontese. Powering the Husker football team and powering the Common Fan Podcast. Now, this is the football podcast. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows the rules. Thankfully, we were able to secure a waiver from the Common Fan Board of Directors to talk some Husker hoops this week, given all the excitement about both the Husker men's and women's teams being in the big dance this year. We are joined today by a very special guest, very exciting to get a little preview from the Aggie side of things. Ag Jack is the co-founder of Ag Knox and co-host of the Kyle Av podcast, the Texas A&M podcast. Ag Jack, thanks so much for joining the Common Fans today.
Thanks for having me, guys. Looking forward to talking about this matchup.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're an A&M grad, right?
Yes, sir. Graduated in 2018.
Lifelong A&M fan?
No, so I actually grew up in North Carolina. So I'm a Tar Heel. I'm getting my MBA at UNC right now. But obviously graduated from A&M. Kind of got adopted by that culture. Brainwashed a little bit when I showed up. So here we are.
So your experience with A&M is entirely in the SEC era then?
Yeah, so the first game that I ever went to in high school was Johnny Manziel's first game, kickoff against Florida. And from that point forward, I kind of got hooked. So I watched a couple games at the end of the Big 12 season, but yeah, pretty much my entire experience in the SEC.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
Great time to be indoctrinated into the A&M fan base when you got Johnny Football running around and throwing the football around. It's got to be a fun time to be an A&M fan. I'm guessing that.
I tell everyone I showed up in 2014 and left in 2018. So I was there for the Sumlin era after Johnny left and left right before Jimbo showed up. So I just got to see the bad parts of what was left of Sumlin after Johnny went to the NFL.
Well, I would imagine, you know, Johnny Football makes the Yell Squad go down a little smoother, but maybe we get into that a little bit later. So the obvious, all of Husker Nation for the last week has been sort of nonstop focused on the news of Trevor Kendall Alberts leaving Nebraska for Texas A&M. Kind of curious on your end of things. What are you hearing from folks? What has people's reaction been? What are A&M fans saying? It's official now. They've done the press conference. They've done the sway back and forth dance together. What are folks saying about Trevor?
Yeah, we like to embarrass ourselves quite a bit on social media. We're just kind of addicted to that lifestyle, but we lean into it now, so you just got to respect it at this point. As far as the stuff with Trev, man, I think it's a lot of lukewarm and mixed reactions so far. And that kind of goes back to everything that went down with Bjork and Jimbo, which we can get into a little bit. But I think, the fan base is split, right? You bring in a guy who doesn't understand and like get A&M because it's weird, it's specific. you've kind of got to have at least some, you know, Texas background or culture to understand what we're about, what we do. So there's, you know, old traditional people that don't like that he's not a part of that. And then there's some, you know, new age folks that are like, hey, this guy is going to understand NIL. He comes in with a pretty good track record. He's confident. He's a football guy. Let's see what'll happen. But I would say it's pretty mixed.
I think, I mean, you know, I think for us, and we talked about this in our last pod, the feelings in Nebraska would be less volatile. We'll use that term. If Trev hadn't played at Nebraska and been an All-American and Buckus Award winner, really, for the most part, I thought he did a decent job as our athletic director. And I'm sure he'll do fine with Texas A&M too. So I think you got a good one, but he might not be there very long. He's a climber.
Yeah. I wouldn't bet on it, Matt. I wouldn't bet on it. I don't know if he'll do a good job. I don't think that's a guarantee by any means.
Well, to be honest with you guys, when I first saw that we had hired him, obviously we're in a transition period. We had RC Slocum step in at the interim, and it was kind of like a non-news cycle situation. There wasn't a lot of reaction to it. But immediately, for my personal experience as a Carolina Panthers fan, seeing that we had brought in the guy who hired Matt Rhule for y'all, I was not particularly stoked up front for it. I'm not going to lie.
Well, we're drinking the Roulette on this podcast. We're pretty big. We're pretty big Matt Rhule fans. So, maybe we can get into that a little bit more toward the end.
Sure thing.
Will Trevor be required to join in with the male yeller squad cheerleaders at some point, or how does that work?
Yeah, so unfortunately for Trev, supporting the yell leaders is going to be a big part of his job and the optics of what he's doing. You know, that's why we have to pay such a premium to get folks to College Station in the first place. So I think he gets that. I think money talks, and that's just kind of where we're at. But my podcast and kind of our following is more of the newer thinking progressive Aggie fans that, you know, maybe they're not so involved in the traditions as some of the older folks, and maybe we're kind of pushing back a little bit on the yell leaders and some of the weirder stuff that we do, but we'll talk about that more.
Hey, we've all got our weird traditions, right? I mean,
man, like you got to own it. Like you said, you lean into it. I like it.
So can you, real quick, before we get into specifics and in basketball, March Madness talk and all that, what the heck is Gig'em? What does Gig'em mean?
Man, I think that it had something to do with back in, like, you know, 100 years ago, 120 years ago, when it was an all-male school, and they were playing TCU or something with the Frogs. Someone said, let's gig the Frogs. And I guess gigging Frogs has to do with, like, hunting them down or something. I don't know. And so now that's just part of it. Like, everything that you can ask about all the weird stuff at A&M always has a story that is going to leave you feeling like I didn't explain anything to you, and it still doesn't make sense.
Hey, we're the Cornhuskers, for crying out loud. And before that, we were the Bug Eaters. So, you know, who knows what we were doing back in the day? Wow. Yeah, before we were the Cornhuskers, we were the Bug Eaters.
That's an all-time name. I wish you guys would have kept that.
There's some, yeah, I think once in a while there's some apparel out there that there's some Bug Eater stuff that goes out in circulation once in a while, but Cornhuskers is better, but at least for me, in my opinion, I'd rather be a Cornhusker than a Bug Eater.
It's unique.
Sure is.
Yeah, no doubt. So Ag Jack, I know you're a little bit younger than us, and your experience is entirely SEC era, but obviously the Huskers and Aggies spent some time in the Big 12 together. I don't know if you know this, Nebraska holds a 12-8 lead in the all-time series on the hardwood. I'm just curious, how much sleep are Aggie fans losing just from having nightmares from the old days of playing those Nebraska basketball juggernauts of the 1990s and 2000s?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I graduated in 2018. I didn't grow up an Aggie fan, don't have experience in the Big 12. But I can say pretty confidently, we don't think about you guys ever You're not on our radar whatsoever. We're focused on bigger schools that are going to hand us a beating, like Mississippi State and Vanderbilt.
Cut his mic off.
You know,
shots
cut
fired.
His mic off. Cut him off. Cut him off.
Well, there's a lot of sarcasm in that statement too, Ag Jack. With Nebraska basketball history is not exactly lush with the trophies and titles that the football program has had over the years. So, so for us to have any kind of a winning record against any other, you know, big time schools basketball program, it's a little feather in the cap for us.
Yeah, exactly.
Big deal.
Oh, I hear you, man. I mean, it's crazy to think, like, so you guys haven't ever won a tournament game before?
No.
That's correct.
See, the only,
how is that even possible?
The only major conference program to never win a tournament game. Northwestern was with us till a few years ago. Chris Collins and gang got it done. But, yeah, we're the only one.
Yeah. And we were, weren't we a three seed back in, like, the early 90s, too? Like,
yeah.
We were pretty high up there, and we still couldn't win.
There was, I want to say from 89 to 93, we made the dance 4 years in a row. And one of those years, was that Rich King, Matty-O?
Yeah.
That
Tony Farmer.
Yeah, those guys. We were a three seed and, you know,
beat by Xavier. Xavier, right. 14 seed Xavier beat us.
That's tough. Cool.
Then there was there was another year where we were, the year we won the Big Eight tournament. We had Eric Piatkowski and Eric Strickland, some of those guys.
Yep.
And that year we got upset by Penn. Not even Penn State. Penn.
Just Penn. Just playing on Penn.
Just Ivy League Penn.
Average Penn.
I feel for you guys. We feel like we have it rough a lot of the time, but then you talk to some other fan bases and it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of groin kicks over the years for Husker fans.
Yeah. I mean, but in those days, I mean, the basketball team was better, not great, but better. And then we were winning lots and lots of football games. So it didn't seem to matter as much.
Right.
Right.
Or, you know, on the A&M side, you guys with your second consecutive March Madness appearance, 10th in the last 18 years with a Sweet 16 run mixed in there. Not that long ago, 2016, I think I saw. So for this year's team, kind of what's been the strong point of the team? What can the Huskers expect when they tip it off on Friday?
Yeah, I mean, so this team has been quite a roller coaster this year. It started with the indefinite suspension of one of our senior starters, Julius Marble, who was pretty much expected to be a returning above average player. We still don't know what happened with him. He hasn't played a game. It was pretty much the second week of the season. Buzz announced he's not coming back, so he just kind of pushed forward. And they struggled. I mean, they started off the season ranked 13th. They beat Iowa State, who's a two seed right now. And then they just, after Iowa State, they lost six of their next 10. Came back, had some life, beat Kentucky and Tennessee, and then they lost five in a row. And we were all like, okay, we're not making the tournament this year. Classic Buzz, they win three at the end of the year, and then they won two in the SEC tournament, including another win against Kentucky. So for some reason, the team gets up for big games, but they're pretty prone to kind of, I guess, wetting the bed against lesser opponents, which kind of lends to this type of game. It's like two medium range teams. You don't know which way it's going to go. Like, is A&M going to get up for this game? It's tough to say, but I think that they like to follow the identity of Buzz for better and for worse. They're tough. They're scrappy. They're really good on the boards. Their defense is great. They do all the hustle stuff, but as scrappy and tough as they are, they just can't shoot at all. Basically, if you guys shut down Wade Taylor, they're not going to score the basketball. The only upside is there's been a guard that they kind of inserted in the starting lineup over the past like 10 games or so. His name's Manny Obaseki, and he was on the bench all year, but he's kind of given us a spark scoring the basketball a little bit. So they're going small ball now. They moved one of our starters to the bench, and it's been working a little bit.
All right, so beware Manny Obaseki, Husker fans. Is that the message?
Well, he's helped because nobody else can stretch the floor and score other than Wade Taylor. I mean, we're going to talk about Boots Radford. He's a pretty good slasher, pretty decent player all around. But if Wade's not going, they just can't put the ball in the hoop.
I'm texting all of this I'm texting all of this information to Fred Hoiberg as we speak. So keep going.
I think
keep
he knows.
Which, by the way, I love the name Buzz. Buzz is just a badass name, in my opinion, too. I don't know. I guess Buzz in Home Alone is kind of an asshole, but Buzz as a whole is a pretty cool name. He had, 25 wins overall last year? I think he had 20 wins this year, give or take. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, right, so Buzz, he's had like a pretty up and down tenure at A&M. Yeah. The thing is, even though it hasn't been fantastic to this point, because A&M fans, like, we're pretty like, we understand the resources that we have and the money that is tossed around this organization. And you expect greatness, you expect recruiting, even though we're in College Station, even though, you know, we've kind of been overshadowed by Texas at times, you expect them to get things done. But, you know, with Buzz, it's like he took over for Billy Kennedy. Billy Kennedy only went to the tournament twice in 8 years. Buzz, obviously, we're going to back-to-back tournaments now, but it hadn't been done since Chris Middleton was playing at A&M. So we're kind of like in a beggars can't be chooser situation. Like, we talked about firing him at the end of this year. It's obviously not going to happen. I think he's good enough for us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're not nearly in the same situation as you, but I mean, we gave our coach an extension this year when his back was up against the wall the year before that. So you never know what's going to happen. But the one thing is that TJ noticed it too, is that dude can dress. Sharp dresser. Are three-piece suits like part of the Aggie dress code, or what are you guys doing down there?
Well, usually we're one-piece suits, as you can see with our yell leaders.
The overalls. The one-piece overalls.
Touché.
Yeah. I mean, look, Buzz is a character. Like, I don't know if you guys see him tweet ever. Every word, he finds an emoji to follow up that word with in a sentence. So he can have like a 7-word sentence and there'll be 7 emojis in there, or he'll replace the words with emojis. He's a good fit for what we're doing because we are weird and we are like supposed to be, you know, blue collar, tough, scrappy as far as like the entire school itself. But I mean, like, I don't think he's been dressing in the 3-piece suit lately. I think he changed it up after a losing streak.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's pretty common though. You don't see that many coaches in suits anymore. It's usually like a quarter zip and some golf pants or something like that. Yeah. But basketball shoes. Buzz is a hell of a coach. I remember watching his Marquette teams and being really impressed with what he did there.
Yeah. I mean, he was strong at Virginia Tech and Marquette. Like, he's always been the kind of guy where it's like, you get to the end of the season and for some reason, whatever it is, like, his team starts to mesh, they start to lock in and they go on a run that maybe they weren't expected to go on. But I mean, look at last year, you know, we were a 7 seed and we ran into a buzzsaw against Penn State. So you just never know.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Wade Taylor, you mentioned Radford. You know, Taylor's averaging up near 20 points a game. Radford's over 16 points a game. Kind of curious about that dynamic. And I know, those two guys are guards, if I'm not mistaken, doing a lot of the scoring for the Aggies. They're also, I think, known as a pretty good rebounding team, right? And so I'm just kind of curious about, you know, the dynamic there on defense. Is it kind of that 1-2 punch that we need to shut down? You know, how do they work their big guys into the equation? Just kind of curious what that looks like.
Yeah, so they're kind of morphing the way that they're playing. They're moving to small ball. It's a little bit different. We had a guy, Henry Coleman, who was our big guy, like the prototypical center, rebounding, getting fouled, you know, posting up. But I think that they've wanted to shift the way that they kind of approach things with how they were struggling. So, I mean, there are times when Wade Taylor just looks straight up like Steph Curry out there. He can take over a game if he gets hot. And whenever he does, you can just feel it. He's going out there and it feels like he's going 1-on-5, making ridiculous heat checks, step backs, or drawing like James Harden fouls that are just going to frustrate the hell out of the other team. As far as Boots, Radford, that's what we call Tyrese. I think Buzz calls him Boots because he's tough as boots or something. I don't know. It's one of those things. he's definitely the number 2 guy, you know, super athletic, good defensively. He's a slasher. He can kind of stretch the floor a little bit, shoot a little bit. But like I said, if you guys shut down Wade, it's just really, really difficult for this team to score. I would look out for Anderson Garcia off the bench. He is like the prototypical buzz guy. He'll fly around. He gets crazy tips, offensive rebounds. He doesn't put up any numbers, but he just has a big impact on the game regularly. So if you aren't prepared for it, he can just like make you look pretty stupid pretty fast.
Interesting. Well, I think one thing that Fred's team, an adjustment that Fred made after his first two or three years at Nebraska, was really emphasizing defense. And so I would say this year's team and last year's team have been drastically improved on the defensive side of the ball compared to his first handful of teams. And so hopefully we can shut down Wade and really lock it down on the defensive side of the ball. But it'll be interesting to see, because, you know, I swear to God, going back to when we were kids, when Danny Nee was the coach, Nebraska basketball teams have had this thing where this just go in several minute long scoring droughts. It doesn't matter who the coach is. It doesn't matter what the personnel is year to year.
Yeah.
We just do this. I feel like it's happened less this year. Matt and Jeff, you guys can correct me. It's anecdotal. I don't have any data. But I think we're always, even when things are going well, even when Tominaga is hitting 28 threes, you're constantly dreading like the next 8 minute scoring draft.
Yeah. Well, it just happened against Illinois. I mean, we're up 15 on Illinois in the Big Ten tournament semifinals. And then there came one of those historic scoring droughts. So, you know, we've struggled with forever. So yeah, it does happen.
Didn't that happen to Illinois during the regular season too?
Yeah.
We came out of halftime up like 20 and pissed it away. So yeah.
I think Husker fans are excited. I think they're cautiously optimistic, Ag Jack, but going into this game. But like we have, you know, we've had enough bad experiences that I think we all are just kind of holding our breath, hoping that we can get a win and make a little bit of a run here.
Yeah, we're go ahead, Jeff.
You have them in your Sweet 16 in your bracket. I know you do.
Me?
Oh yeah.
I have them in the Final Four.
What it sounds like to me is maybe we should all just band together and take the under on this one.
Yeah.
Let's do.
Yeah.
Certainly, we can unite on that night around that.
Yep.
I will say, I think it feels like the way that our bracket is set up, Houston tends to choke in this tournament, and I'm not saying they're going to lose that first game, but it feels like whoever can come out of our game maybe has a shot to get to that Sweet 16 and then push it from there. So I think this is actually a bit more of an important game than maybe a lot of other people outside of, you know, our two fan bases might see it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some Husker sort of observers and prognosticators have made that same point. So definitely like, not the number one seed you would fear the most, at least. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, of course, the women's teams are playing each other. And it's been, you know, it's been a pretty dang good year for the Nebraska women's basketball team. They made a Big Ten tournament final. A lot of young talent on the Husker women's basketball team. Any insight into the Aggie women's team coming in at an 11 seed?
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know what's going on with our women's team. It's definitely weird that we're playing you guys across the board in both matchups. It feels like it was definitely done on purpose. The committee's got a sense of humor. It is what it is with the Trev Albert stuff going on. I can't say I followed them in a year. Were they an 11 seed?
Yep.
Yeah. Doesn't cross the radar, unfortunately.
Fair enough. I think it's interesting that narrative, and I know, like, I think you're right. It's not just a coincidence. And I think there's, you know, I think probably a play for some intrigue and some eyeballs there with these matchups. And some folks have made the point about, you know, this is stupid. Matt Rhule actually, it should be about the players. It shouldn't be about an athletic director who went from one school to the other. And while I agree with that, I don't think most fans care. I don't think the players care at all. Like I generally of the opinion that, any given player of any given sport, like may or may not even know who the athletic director is. I don't think they care that much. Right. I mean, let me put it a different way. If you're a member of either the Nebraska or A&M basketball teams, you're excited about the opportunity to play in March Madness. I don't think you're thinking much about Trevor Kendall Alberts.
You're 100% correct there. And this is honestly, like, if you'll let me, I'm just going to go back to the Matt Rhule quote, because it reminds me of so many quotes that I saw as a Panthers fan. And listen, like,
You can't let it go.
I get it. Well, he put us in this position. I get it that he could be a much better fit for college football for several reasons, and I'll give you all those. But I think that him with that quote, and you'll get used to this, especially if you don't start winning, he loves to say things that get all the attention on Matt Rhule. And your listeners might hate me for this, but just come back to it one day if you guys get frustrated with him. He loves to be the center of attention. He loves to talk about, let's just focus on the kids. Well, you saying that is bringing the focus off the kids. I don't think anyone cares that much about the AD thing. And as far as like a March Madness, whenever it's matchups, it's always the pageantry of the school versus the school anyway. It's never really like, quote, about the players, at least as far as like the common fan goes. So, I could go on about Matt Rhule if you guys want to go off about that, but, or at least like question me and I can question you, but if you don't want to do it, we can save it for another pod.
we can go down that road. We got a couple more questions we want to ask, but yeah, we can go down that road a little bit. I was sticking on that point. So I must admit, like, even since we've hired Rhule, I didn't pay attention at the time when he was with the Panthers, and I have not gone back and looked at much of what was going on then. But don't you think, I mean, isn't part of the blame at least on that sort of what appears to be slightly unstable general manager that the Panthers have?
Yeah. What's his name?
The guy who threw his drink on somebody late in the season
So that's
year?
Our owner, David Tepper.
The owner. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. You're not wrong. Everybody's to blame in these situations. It's a defunct organization. But I think part of that, the beginning of the defunct and the downfall and the dwindling of my precious NFL team that I used to enjoy watching on Sundays had to do with Matt Rhule coming in and kind of like pushing things the way that he wanted to push them, in the same kind of vein as how he wanted to run Baylor. And he's a college football coach, and it wasn't his fault that someone wanted to pay him huge money to come in and run the organization. So I don't blame him for that, but I know a lot of people were very excited when he left, and the way that he came off towards the end was pretty much very unlikable. Like, he had a very low approval rate with Panthers fans across the board, and, wish him the best. But I also know people personally that played for him in college at Baylor, and I hear some of the same stories constantly from him. Specifically, it's always about the money for him, and he's always just chasing the bag, climbing the ladder. So I'm just warning you guys, this might not be his end game. He's got a little bit of that Lane Kiffin mentality there.
Okay. Listen, appreciate what you said. I want you to know it went in one ear and out the other. and we're fully on board with Matt Rhule. We're excited to win a Big Ten championship, if not this year, probably next year. And so definitely appreciate your perspective there, though. We're all about free speech on this program.
I'm happy to give it to you. And look, you made a great move going and getting Rayola, and it's looking up for you guys 100%. This is just my experience with the guy.
Fair enough.
Pivot to football if you want. I mean, we did get the approval from the Common Fan Board of Directors to talk football for a little while. In my opinion, I follow a lot of college football more than basketball, to be honest with you. And so I come from a divided house. We are Nebraska fans on one side, but I also grew up in a Notre Dame house as well. And so, yeah, it's kind of a lot of domestic things going on within our house because of our rival teams. But one person I did notice that came onto our radar last year watching Notre Dame games was Mike Elko. And I know that he's come along to the Aggies now. Just point blank, what do you think about that? Are you a fan, not a fan? How is that? You like that hire coming off of Jimbo? I'm just curious to get somebody that's there, just their inside thoughts on that, because I find it fascinating.
Yeah, number one, he's not Jimbo, and it's a splashy hire, or it's not a splashy hire. I'm sorry. It's the opposite of what we did last time, but I think we can back it up a little bit. So I don't know if you guys remember, and this is what happened with Ross Bjork, our former AD. So whenever we had fired Jimbo, obviously Jimbo had the worst extension in college football history, maybe sports history as a coach. We accept that. We acknowledge that. And a lot of people were still on board with Jimbo up until he got fired. So it was a pretty polarizing situation throughout. But Bjork gave him that extension. And then when we started the process to look for another coach, I think it was right before the playoff, there was basically a midnight breaking of news that we were going to hire Mark Stoops away from Kentucky. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah, remember that.
I think I do remember that roughly, yeah.
So it had been confirmed. We just have to get the ink on paper. He's on his way to College Station in a private jet right now. The next 2-3 hours after that, he essentially got pushed out just by the forums on TexAgs, by Twitter. The fans bullied the Board of Regents into basically blocking this move. And then it, whether it's true or not, it came out a little bit later that Bjork had gone behind the board's back and brought Mark Stoops on his own, and he was just planning on signing him at midnight. So apparently Stoops shows up on the tarmac, and they tell him to turn around and go back to Kentucky.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So shortly after that, it was basically like all trust in Bjork had been removed, whether it was propaganda from the Board of Regents or just the fan base in general, because nobody wanted Mark Stoops. So, you know, a couple days go by, a week, whatever. We bring in Elko. Elko was always on our radar. He was Jimbo's defensive coordinator. I knew a GA on the team, one of those assistant coaches. He worked directly under Elko for a few years, and he loved the guy. They think he's brilliant. They think he was disciplinary, unlike Jimbo. Jimbo let a lot of things slide. Jimbo was obsessed with just getting the best recruiting classes and, you know, just kind of bringing in the highest stars he could, just so that he could kind of flaunt that when he goes to recruit elsewhere. And it didn't translate. So I think that with Elko, it's a very low-key hire, but he's already come in. He's kind of instilled a lot of discipline in that program. We've heard some stuff from players and coaches that things are just completely different now than they were beforehand. And a lot of them seem to be like kind of undercutting Jimbo subliminally. But people are really, really excited and happy with this hire, but it's still lukewarm because we're coming off of a pretty bad sting with the whole Jimbo thing.
So I'm curious, when you say Elko is not Jimbo, how do you mean that? Like, you mean that in a good way or a bad way?
He's essentially the anti-Jimbo. That all the things that have come out from Jimbo, his tenure at A&M, unfortunately, he's stubborn, he's pompous. He basically took everything from Florida State and Jameis Winston and tried to apply that to what we were doing at A&M. He's a great recruiter. He was a great face of the organization and the program. But at the end of the day, we brought in that number one recruiting class, and I think half those guys are still around. We lost a bunch of them that year. They were speeding around, smoking weed in the parking garages, in the locker room, and it's whatever, but there just wasn't real discipline. And now you're seeing things as simple as like when Elko showed up, guys are getting locked out of team meetings if they don't show up on time because they walked in 5 minutes late. Sorry, you can't come in. Stuff like that. And a lot of guys transferred, but a lot of guys also transferred in. So we're seeing a huge shift in the culture right now, and we're hoping that it's going to translate because Elko did a lot with what he had at Duke, and it wasn't much there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just interesting as a Husker fan, having seen us, you know, Well, we've in the last 20-ish years, we've hired, you know, we fired 2 9-3 coaches and, you know, are still fighting about both of those probably amidst the fan base. But just looking at Jimbo, you know, the guy's been to the college football playoff with Florida State. At A&M, he went 9-4, 8-5, 9-1 in the COVID year, 8-4 in 2021. Was that 2022 season? Went 5-7. Is that when everything started to derail for him, or were these other issues already lingering about sort of the discipline, and like were there people already starting to doubt him before he had that losing season in 2022?
So obviously the COVID season was a success for us. We won the Orange Bowl. We, you know, went 10-1. We almost made the playoff. And overzealous with the extension, because it's like, hey, this is confirmation of everything that we brought him here to do, and we think he's going to do it for years. So, I mean, it did start to unravel a little bit after that, because it felt like he wasn't changing and he wasn't adapting, and he started getting his butt handed to him in SEC games, and we weren't winning conference home games. It was just difficult. And you know, that Appalachian State loss at home, he kind of leaned on a lot of quarterback injuries to give excuses. But at the end of the day, like, these guys would go elsewhere and have a little bit of success. And he just wasn't the quarterback guru that we thought he was after Jameis Winston and some of the stuff at Florida State. So the shine started to wear off a little bit. And then eventually, you know, it got to the point where it was the same thing every year. It's like, we get to that Alabama game and we're either 5-0 or 4-1, and then we get crushed, and then we lose a couple games after that to the Mississippi schools. And we've seen this movie before, man. So, yeah, I mean, all I know from the program, inside the program, is that he was extremely stubborn and unwilling to listen. And that was part of why, whenever we brought Bobby Petrino in to be the offensive coordinator, Petrino shows up ready to install an offense, and Jimbo's like, no, you're not. You're just here. You're just going to be here to stand around the sidelines. So that was kind of how it went.
That sounds pretty dysfunctional.
Oh, yeah.
You know, before we go, we've got to ask you, and I have to admit, Ag Jack, I got kind of a kick out of the when it was announced that Texas and Oklahoma were moving to the SEC. There was that clip from was it the Bradley Cooper movie where oh gosh, and Jennifer Lawrence and Christian Bale, the name of the movie is escaping me, but there was the clip going around of everybody like bullying this one guy, or making fun of this one guy, or whatever it was. And in the thing, somebody redid it to put like different schools on each person that was involved in the clip. And it was, anyway, it was kind of making fun of A&M. Not that that part made me funny, made me laugh. It was just the fact that Texas was coming back to the same conference as the Aggies. So what is like, obviously this has been reality now for a while, but it's finally happening. What is the, you know, because we have our own hatred of Texas in Lincoln and across Nebraska. Let's be clear, like there is no love lost for the Longhorns. But kind of what's the feeling as this reality is now, you know, sort of coming to fruition?
So yeah, I think across the board, there's this weird perception that we don't want them around and we're scared of them, and I don't know what level that goes to, but it's not true. I mean, we want them in the SEC. It's typical hypocritical Texas behavior to be, you know, screaming about how being in the SEC doesn't matter and, you know, making fun of it means more and all that stuff. And now they're here with open arms and they're so excited to be a part of it. For my generation, the kids that grew up not really having that rivalry, like going to school without that rivalry present, and the SEC schedule makers trying to push South Carolina on us, or like even LSU, it never felt right. And I'm someone who grew up a Carolina fan. We have Carolina Duke. That is like, that game just feels different, and it's different every year, no matter what your records are. It's just, you've got this rival that you hate so much, and you've got so much passion against, and you know their fans personally. And it's just more of that full college football experience that you need with that rivalry. So to get that back is just going to mean so much for both fan bases. As much as they won't admit it, they love to be coming back and playing us too, because we talk to these people on a day-to-day basis and we just haven't been able to, you know, I guess, release on all this built up tension between us for so long. We're super excited to be able to play them again. I mean, that Thanksgiving week game is going to be, it's going to divide families. It's going to be so much fun to look forward to. And the crap talking online has been, it's been withstanding being in a different conference for 12 years. I mean, we still hate each other with a passion, and now we finally get to kind of act on it. So it'll be fun.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. I got to say too, when it was announced, I mean, I know they're coming off a playoff appearance, so that's a little bit of a different story. But when it was announced, like, my first thought was, okay, maybe Oklahoma can show up in the SEC and start being competitive right away. I feel like Texas is going to have a problem, not just with Alabama and Georgia and LSU. I think they're going to have a problem with half the conference. Like, I don't think they can expect to show up and just start dominating in the SEC like perhaps some of their fans might think.
100%. And you guys know this, being in the Big Ten. It's not like, to an extent, you know, being in the Big 12, you can sleepwalk through games against bad opponents and expect to win and correct it the next week without, you know, any blemish on your record. In the SEC, you have to be locked in and week out. If you're playing against, whether it's Kentucky or South Carolina, some of the lesser known SEC teams or the lesser prominent SEC teams, it does not matter. These are all hyper athletes. Yeah. Like, the competition in this league is unreal. So when we tell Texas fans, you've got a rude awakening coming, they laugh. They send the screenshot of the score against Alabama, yada, yada. Guess what? You cannot go into the game that you went into against Wyoming last year. You cannot go into the game you went into against Texas Tech last year and struggle early on and just bounce back and score 28 points in the fourth quarter against an SEC team to win that game. Not going to happen. So I think that they're in for an extremely rude awakening, but, you know, that's also me being a little biased and hopeful.
I think we can all unite on hoping that Texas has a very rude awakening in the SEC and, in fact, never actually finds their footing. I think that's fair to hope. Does that make me a bad person?
Absolutely not.
Listen, my entire wife's family went to Texas, and I tell them all the time, it's not you. I just hate your team so much, and I will never, like, I'm not going to root for your team just because you went there.
Are you going to have to, like, go stay in a cabin by yourself somewhere on Thanksgiving weekend, or how's that going to work?
We're planning this out. We're going to try to see if we can get tickets to the ones in College Station. And on those years, you know, sorry, family, you're going to stay in Austin for Thanksgiving. Or you're going to stay wherever you're at. And I don't know, it'll be weird. It'll be tense, but we're looking forward to it. It adds a little spice to Thanksgiving.
Well, I can relate, not on that same like level of just total hated rival, but I married an Oregon Duck. And so it's been easy to cheer for each other's teams up to this point, but now the Ducks are coming to the Big Ten. So it's going to get a little bit more
a little dicey.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I hear you, but look, it's so much fun, because now it's like, you guys are going to be playing each other. You can go travel for those games. The opportunity that is presented by these super leagues being formed, I think a lot of people that are old fashioned aren't really accepting of this, but it's like, you're going to go have the opportunity. Like, A&M can go play, you know, Ohio State or Florida State or whoever, whenever it becomes a conglomerate, like, we have this opportunity to play teams we've never played before. And that's just fun for college football.
100%.
We've talked about that a fair amount and completely agree, actually. I mean, I think there, you know, it's fair to be wary of some of the changes in college football and how fast they're happening. But if you want to look on the upside, we completely agree with you. I think just with the opportunities for new, like, matchups of historic programs, new rivalries to form. I mean, I think there's going to be, you know, college football Saturdays are not going to become less great.
For sure. Like, I just playing like a West Coast, like a California team, like USC or UCLA, and Nebraska getting to do that consistently, I just think that's going to be awesome. I think that's going to be really, really fun. I can't wait for it.
100%.
Absolutely. All right, Geoff, you got anything else for our distinguished Texas A&M guest today?
I mean, good luck with Elko. Notre Dame had their way with him this last season, so there's going to be some growing pains there, but there's no doubt in my mind he'll do a good job for you, I'm sure.
Yeah, much appreciated, and good luck to you guys. It was a pleasure being on here. If anyone was interested in following A&M stuff, you can follow us at Agnox on Twitter and myself at AgJack10 on Twitter.
Yeah, real quick, tell us about Agnox, because the podcast is named something different. So do you guys do you put out other content as well under the Agnox banner, or tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Kyle Av is kind of our flagship podcast. Agnox itself is kind of a sports media company. Last year, we put on Tailgates through Agnox. We're planning on kind of building out that podcast network under there. We tried to do an NFL one for a little bit, kind of stretch this thin, but, you know, I think Agnox eventually, we want it to be a website. We want it to be a forum. We want to kind of build on it and create a community there.
Super cool. Cool. Super cool. Yeah. Well, Husker fans, you know, if you want to just do a little opposition research, you know, or, you know, get a handle on what's going on with, you know, what Trevor Kendall is walking into, check out Agnox. But we're going to put up the Chinese wall starting, you know, probably tomorrow, until after Friday. We got to get through these two basketball games on Friday. but AgJack, really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
All Common fans are going to enjoy listening to this one. Get ready for Friday, Common fans. Big day in Husker Nation. And we'll be back at you soon after that. As always, As always, GBR for life. We'll be right back.